Good evening. This is Thursday, 6 p.m. It means that we have Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. I'm your host, John Pierce. Our engineer this evening is Operations Director Neil Heaver. We welcome you all to this very interesting hour that we're going to spend talking about suicide prevention. Mental illness affects one out of every four persons. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death nationally, and over 1,900 Pennsylvanians died by suicide in 2016, the last date that I have in my notes. So we're going to talk about connection between suicide and mental illness. My two guests for the first two segments of our show are Richard Orleman, who is Deputy Director of Mental Health and Mental Health Administrator, and Allison France, who is Coordinator for Lehigh County Suicide Prevention Task Force. Let's talk a little bit about Allison first. She serves as Coordinator of the Suicide Prevention Task Force of Lehigh County, has over 35 years' experience in the field of human services, delivery systems, management, and administration, including Medicaid managed care. Wow, Allison, how in the world did you get your mind around Medicaid from what I've heard of it?
Well, it is definitely an interesting topic.
For another time.
Correct.
In Northampton County, Allison served as director of the Department of Human Services, administered all the human service offices, including the County Skilled Nursing Facility, and Veterans Affairs. She's been around the block a few times. Prior to Northampton County, she worked in Lehigh County. During her tenure, served as the Health Choices Administrator. That's how I got to know you.
Correct.
Right? As Health Choices Administrator, the Child and Adolescent Service System Program Coordinator, and worked at in the area Agency on Aging and Mental Health Offices as well. Recently served as Chief of Staff for the Deputy Secretary of Mental Health in the Office of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services at the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. How people keep up with all these titles and names of organizations and parts of the county and the state, I don't know. It's a challenge. My other guest, Richard Orleman, works closely with Allison. Is that a fact, Dick, or are you sort of distant?
No, we work together. I'm on the task force, and she's the coordinator.
So do you see each other daily, or only if you can't help it?
At meetings and activities surrounding, like, what we're doing today or our task force meeting.
Right. And we work closely in Lehigh County.
Yeah, we were at 10 feet away.
Yeah, so we have a lot of interaction.
So Richard Orleman has 33 years of service as crisis counselor and supervisor for both Lehigh and Northampton counties, and he is now deputy mental health administrator for Lehigh County. So, Dick, you have 33 years. Allison is claiming 35 years. How many years does that make between the two of you?
We're young yet. I don't know.
Young. 68 years.
Yeah. Oh, he's good. He's good. It's exactly 68. Right. So we hear nowadays a lot about suicide, and particularly in the case of both of you, suicide prevention being a big topic in our counties, in our state, in the whole country. We hear much more about it today. We were talking off the air about how it used to be that we wouldn't want to mention suicide. It was sort of taboo. It was as if you should feel guilty if somebody in your family committed suicide. And there is some guilt about that.
That's correct. And I would say that's a good starting point to segue into stigma. And I think that a lot of folks remember the time when you didn't talk about it, not just because it was personal or private information, but because, sort of like cancer, the C word, you just did not talk about it. You did not talk about it in your family. And if you were thinking those kinds of thoughts, you did not say those things. And what the task force wants to do is start a conversation. Start a conversation, whether it be one-on-one, whether it be between the task force and a political subdivision, a township, whatever. But start the conversation and let folks understand that it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to say to someone, I'm not okay. And it's okay for someone to ask a friend or loved one, are you okay? So, yeah, we need to get better about that. And I think we are getting there. And because of that, we are in the midst of much more research. We have many more best practices that are available to us that we can utilize. And we have a lot of data as well. I don't know, Dick, what else?
Yeah, that mental illness is treatable, so treat it that way. And mental illness is no different than a physical health situation. So I wouldn't say, well, I happen to have a high blood pressure, so I wouldn't act embarrassed by saying, I have high blood pressure. You know, it's very embarrassing. I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
And there are also times I don't have a clinical diagnosis of depression, but there are times that I get depressed. There are times that I get anxious. And those are mental health situations. So all of us face that. So there should be no stigma any more than having high blood pressure or heart disease with having a mental illness.
Right. And Allison, when you say, I'm not feeling okay, are you saying, in effect, I might harm myself or others?
Yes. And that speaks to how one can help a loved one or a friend. When they notice, now, you know, Dick, help me with this. There are many observable indicators when someone might not be feeling well or when someone might be wanting to harm themselves. There are things like they're expressing they don't want to live, things like getting their affairs in order, writing poems about death, being preoccupied about death. And if you notice that, it is okay as a friend or a loved one to say, I've noticed these things and I care about you. And are you okay? Are you thinking of hurting yourself? And let me back up a little bit and frame the issue a little bit. There are a lot of times when folks think that someone who is thinking about suicide just doesn't want to live anymore. Now, granted, when you're thinking about suicide, you don't want to live, but it is not that someone is saying to themselves, I just don't want to live anymore. And I say this because research has borne this out, that folks are in such despair, in the throngs of hopelessness and depression and so dark that they cannot see their way out of that place and space. And yet we know that that is a temporary situation. It will be fluid, just like Dick said, some days are harder than other days. So when someone is thinking about suicide, they are thinking about it in terms of a way to end the pain. And folks who have attempted suicide and survived will say that they don't necessarily want to end their life, but they need the pain to stop. And that's where they are from. So when you are talking with someone who has noticeably changes in behavior or expressing these kinds of thoughts, you need to be able to convey that you care about them, because it is the fact that they need to be able to talk about their feelings, that is a positive thing. And you need to be able to take a deep breath and ask the question, because it is difficult. I mean, this isn't something like, how's the weather? And yeah, what about those Eagles? They barely pulled that game out. This is real life, hard information to talk about. So, yes, have the conversation and don't be afraid where it will lead, but don't judge where it will lead, because it's not about you. You may be inside thinking, oh my goodness, this is a hard conversation, yet you are helping someone else by asking and being receptive.
Very well said. Dick, you mentioned right off the bat mental illness a couple of minutes ago. So when we read that somebody has died by suicide, should we be thinking automatically mental illness has to be the reason?
Not necessarily, but statistics bear out that around 90% of people who die by suicide had a diagnosable mental illness at the time of their death, not that they were necessarily in treatment.
Yeah, or not necessarily that they were diagnosed.
Right.
But when you say diagnosable, many people never see a psychiatrist, never get, get it down on paper officially.
And the two hospital systems here, Lehigh Valley and St. Luke's in the Valley, are now doing a really nice job of having embedded social workers, clinicians, in medical family practice and other practices so that it's not as difficult. You might have a better relationship with your family doctor, your general practitioner, where you can share some things that it's like, well, I don't want to go talk to a stranger or a shrink, so to speak, a psychiatrist. So right in that doctor's office, you can talk to a clinician in some cases. So they're really looking at that mental illness is part of the whole person and giving people that opportunity.
And you're right about that. And even though mental illness is a major component, the contextual environment for that individual plays a big part as well. And research bears out that not every risk factor has the same weight or can increase the rate of suicide, but it is interactive. And then you also have something that was more of an immediate stressor, a divorce or a loss of a job or legal troubles. So all these risk factors come to bear. We humans are a complex creature. So there is no one answer and there is no right answer. So we have to be ready for everything.
Let me ask this. If a person seems troubled, let's just emphasize this point. It's okay to mention, to ask the person, have you had thoughts of suicide? Can you actually come out and use the word suicide?
Please.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yes, and I would say that's a myth. There's been a myth that if you ask someone if they're thinking of hurting themselves or thinking about suicide, that you will put the idea in their head. And that is not true, because if someone is thinking about suicide, they are already thinking about it. And if you, as a friend or loved one, say those words, that gives them license that they can speak to you freely, openly, and honestly about what's really going on. And then you, as the receiver of that information, can be ready with support. And I want to segue a little bit here. Support is different from fixing it. Support is, I would be happy to go with you. I would be happy to help you make a phone call. Let's figure out what type of insurance you have. Let's call the Lehigh County Crisis Hotline. Let's call Lehigh County Mental Health. Support is, after you went to the doctor, do you need a prescription filled? Do you have what you need? Let's take a walk. Fixing it is different. And when you are interacting with someone, you cannot be thinking that I am here and going to fix it. And that's very hard, especially if you're a parent talking to a child. You want to protect them and you want to fix it. You cannot fix it. You're not a mental health professional. You are there to support and get them the proper help and additional professional support that they need.
And help can be just a phone call away.
It is, and a neat thing that just happened is the Federal Communications Commission just approved 988, which is a suicide. Right now, it's 1-800-273-TALK is the National Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Let's say that again.
1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K. But now there's 911. They're looking at a way to implement a 988 system so you don't have to think, was that 274, 275? It's 273 talk, not to confuse people, but that all you have to do is dial 988. So hopefully that'll be coming soon, and that will go to suicide hotlines. And the state of Pennsylvania is initiating three sections of the state, three areas, for the 273 Talk hotline. And those are going to be trained counselors 24/7 who can then turn the call over to the appropriate county. After, if it's an emergency, they're going to deal with it in the moment and not just put somebody on hold and transfer them. But if you would call 1-800-273-TALK, once it's to the point that it can be transferred, they would send it to Lehigh County Crisis or Northampton County Crisis and have them work with that individual. But it's really exciting, some of the things that are going on in Lehigh, the state and in the country.
And Lehigh County Crisis is 24/7 as well?
Yeah, all the counties have, the 67 counties have a system for a 24/7 crisis. That's under the Mental Health Act, so that's a mandated service.
What's that phone number?
For Lehigh County, it's 610-782-3127. And Northampton County is 610-252-9060.
Let it be known to our listeners that you spieled off those phone numbers without notes. You must be a professional in the field.
There you go. There you go.
Allison, you mentioned the crisis hotline, which many of our listeners might not know exists. So this is just what Dick is talking about. Call one of these two numbers, and that's crisis hotline?
Exactly. And right. They are staffed with professional trained counselors. And they can also, especially in Lehigh County, and Dick, you can speak more eloquently about this, they can also give direction to the friend or family member who is needing assistance for someone who is in that state of peril. So.
Right, and give, where can you go, what can you do, give guidance and direction and provide help for that person.
Yes, because when we come across a situation and we're not in the field working with suicide prevention, we don't know where to turn, what to do. And so Allison and Dick are giving us some tips today on how to talk to people who may be feeling suicidal. And then for family members and friends, where to go, where to call, what to do.
Also, folks can text. There's a crisis text line, which is 741-741. So that's available for any individual who wants to use that mode of communication. That's 741-741. It's a text.
And like they said in school, there are no dumb questions. So if you if you have any questions about a loved one, yourself, a neighbor, a friend, an acquaintance, call one of the lines, and you're not going to be made to feel foolish. Their questions will be answered, and you'll be given guidance and direction.
Dick, you have a fantastic memory to be stretching back so many years to your school days. Congrats.
So many, very many.
My guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse are Richard Orleman, Deputy Director, Mental Health Administrator, and Allison France, who is the coordinator of Suicide Prevention Task Force for Lehigh County. It's time for us to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few seconds on Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Our topic is suicide prevention. I'm John Pierce, your host. Neil Heaver is our engineer this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Welcome, and you are going to learn many things about how to approach people who may be feeling suicidal, that it is a perfectly good question to ask someone. And would you say the closer you are to that person, the more confidence that person has in you, the easier the conversation is going to be? Would you say, Allison?
I would say yes, and I would say that part of the do's, you know, do's and don'ts, part of the do's when you talk to someone is to be yourself. You are there to show that you care about that person. You are not there to be judgmental. So the fact that you are asking in and of itself speaks volumes. So it doesn't matter if you don't say the right words, even though we give you examples like you don't seem to be acting the same way, or I've been worried about you lately, or are you thinking of hurting yourself? Even if you're not saying those words exactly, if you are open and receptive and care about that individual, that's the main thing. And the other thing I would say is don't be judgmental and don't cut someone off at the knees with, "You're not suicidal, right?" Or, you have so much to live for. What do you mean you want to harm yourself?
Or get over it.
Yes, that's another one. And the get over it headset is different from when someone is in the throngs of despair and hopelessness, and part of a safety plan is to hang on for another minute, another 5 minutes, another hour, another day. That's different from getting over it. Because when you are just doing what you need to do to hang on for that other minute, that's where your safety plan comes into play. And that's where your loved one and friend could help. Sometimes a safety plan includes talking to a trusted individual, a friend, a relative, someone from your church group. It could also be things like making sure you identify what your triggers are. Sometimes it's an anniversary of a death. It could also be doing things that are external to get you out, literally and physically out, taking a walk, going shopping. So having phone numbers ready for the professionals to call. So that get over it is way different from getting through the next minute, the next five, the next hour, the next day.
You just mentioned something that most of us just don't do, and that is think ahead. Have some phone numbers ready to call so that you don't panic at the time that a person seems to be going over the edge, so to speak.
Correct. And I would also say when you're going to talk with someone, do it in a private place and also be ready to spend some time. This is not the, "So, hey, how you doing? See you, bye." This is, I really care about you. You do not seem to be doing well. Let's chat. So you have to have enough time set aside mentally and physically in your day to spend time with that person and have the phone numbers ready, where to call, who to call. You're not going to fix it. You are going to assist and support.
That's a great point, because we live such hurried lives that very often our communication is, "How are you doing? I really don't care, but I want to be nice to you at this moment," right? Mm-hmm. And you're talking exactly the opposite. Slow down, take some time with the person. Dick, you wanted to talk about what we call means restriction. What does that mean?
The means, the access to the means to die by suicide. In the Lehigh Valley in Allentown, the 8th Street Bridge was known as the Suicide Bridge. If you would look on Wikipedia, you would see the Suicide Bridge. What an effort since the 1990s, spearheaded by a group of people in Lehigh County, was to put up a barrier on that bridge. Signs get people to think, but it's the barrier, it's the means restriction that really works. So with the anniversary of the bridge, the 100th anniversary, everybody agreed that the fencing could go up. So there is now fencing around the 8th Street Bridge to prevent people from jumping. And nobody's jumped off the 8th Street Bridge since that time.
Is that right?
And it used to be 1, 2, 3 people a year would jump off the bridge. Mm. So just by restricting it, and people are not going to another bridge. So that's taken away that means. The means restriction can also be making sure if you have guns in your home that they're secure, that they're locked up, that a loved one or family member doesn't have access to those guns. And as Allison was saying, to plan ahead. If you feeling depressed and a friend comes up to you, don't be ashamed to let your friend take your guns out of your house temporarily. You're not giving them up. It's not gun control, it's means restriction. It's during that period of time of depression or that you're having a problem that you're willing to, let's say, have a trusted friend, neighbor, family member take those guns and lock them up. The same with pills, anything that could be the restriction. There's been, in England, there was death by Tylenol. So people could buy a 500 bottle at Walmart or whatever and just down the whole bottle, and it would cause their liver to stop functioning. So England passed a bill that Tylenol now has to be dispensed in blister packs. So just that effort of popping one pill at a time is enough of a means restriction to hopefully help somebody from dying by suicide.
Right. Now, we are older folks talking about suicide, and we have mentioned to each other off the air how this was a taboo subject before in years gone by. I'd say in the past generation or so, we've become more willing to talk about, and particularly with people who might feel suicidal, instead of talking behind their back, talking to them. So not only old folks talking about this, but also we have young folks interested, and there's a movement called Avidem. What do we know about that? Is it the high school level, junior high, or middle school
level? Middle school, high school. It was started in South Central Pennsylvania as a result of a loss of somebody. And Avidem is the Latin word. I believe it's made up, but the students that are going to be on later on can explain that. And it basically means I've got your back. It really took off very nicely in Northampton County. It's expanding. It's up in the Pocono, Monroe County, Corbin County. And there's a couple of schools. Lehigh County has lagged behind, so we are trying to have a concerted effort to have the schools in Lehigh County start Avidem chapters.
And when you mentioned the guests who are going to appear later on, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to two students and their advisor from Nazareth Area High School. And the Avidem Club there is extremely active, very vigorous. I went to one of the meetings that seemed like a pep rally, so it's going to be interesting talking to these students. Suppose I'm asking one of these questions that Allison mentioned, you know, how do you feel? It seems as if you're not acting the same way and so on. How do I know if a person isn't just being dramatic and not truly feeling suicidal?
You're better safe than sorry. I would recommend that, you don't know, as Allison was saying, you're not a professional psychiatrist or therapist. If you believe your family member is at risk, go to a trusted healthcare provider, whether it's your general practitioner, get a recommendation to see a therapist. If they have a therapist embedded with your practice or through your health network, Lehigh Valley or St. Luke's, see one of them. Talk to a friend who might have gone to a counselor and get a recommendation.
So in other words, treat it seriously, even though it might turn out that the person is just pulling your chain and acting dramatic.
Right. You want to be safe on that. And just as a caveat to that, and kind of going back to the whole idea that suicides really can be preventative through means restriction, through talking to people. But there are certain times, sadly, that people do die by suicide, and no effort, no intervention could have prevented that. So really hate the idea. It's like cancer. It says, well, hey, you have cancer X, and that has a 92% survival rate. That's great. It's great for the 92%, but there's still 8% who don't survive. And it's the same with mental illness and with suicide, that there's going to be a certain percentage no matter what you do as a loved one, a family member. So I don't want any listeners who have lost a loved one or a family member or a friend to suicide to feel guilty over that what else could I have done?
Right. Know? No, such a human reaction. And how do you keep guilt away?
There are AFSP, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, has two support groups for people who have lost somebody to suicide, which is a different type of death than a car accident even or an illness. One meets at Lehigh Valley Hospital Muhlenberg campus, and I'm sorry I didn't write down the date, but that can be obtained through the AFSP chapter, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And the other one meets once a month at First Presbyterian Church on Cedarcrest Boulevard at Tillman Street in Allentown. Both are co-led by someone who has lost someone to suicide. The one has a woman who lost her husband to suicide, and the other has a woman who lost her son to suicide. And then they also have professional clinicians as their peer that's helping them in that, so that if somebody comes in and they're in crisis, there's a professional there that can intervene as well.
And the AFSP website is really good with the list of support groups for lost survivors throughout the state and internationally. So it's on the website.
Excellent. Is there such a thing as our listeners becoming involved with the Suicide Prevention Task Force?
Absolutely. Our task force is a backbone organization, and we support social service agencies, groups, communities who are concerned about the rising number of deaths by suicide. So if anyone is interested, please, I'll give you my contact information. So that is going to be my full name, Allison E. France, AllisonEFrantz at gmail.com. And we can have a further conversation about the task force.
Very good. Suicide prevention, what a serious matter, and that is gaining more attention all the time. Is there, what would you say about the question about a single solution for the Lehigh Valley, or is each community unique?
Each person is unique.
Yes.
In each situation, each family is unique, each community is unique, which is a very great thing about the task force in Lehigh County is we're not creating solutions and saying this is what we're going to do for the county. We're presenting information and data going to the communities, and they're saying, boy, we have a problem in this neighborhood. We've had a problem in this location. We've had a problem. And then it takes up a local initiative to look at problems within that neighborhood, look at problems within that community, within that township or municipality.
Well said. And we have data because the Lehigh County coroners have been passionate about this issue, both the previous coroner, Scott Grimm, and the current coroner, Eric Minnick. And we have data, Lehigh County data. We have it analyzed down to political subdivision. So we are able to talk to communities and provide actual data, not just anecdotal information, but pure data. And we use that data to inform strategies. And we also strive to create situations where people can work collaboratively to further prevention efforts. We have an electronic interactive repository for data, and it's the Lehigh Valley Community Hub, and that is lehighvalleyhub.org. Anyone can look at the data there, the best practice information. There's a registration process like most things, but it's local information and best practice information nationally. So we are using that to have a proper conversation, an informed conversation, a current conversation about how and what each community can do around prevention of suicide.
And what's, give us that address again to go online?
For the Lehigh Valley Community Hub, the email, or I should say the website, is lehighvalleyhub.org.
And lots of great information there. How about the basic question, how would you answer people who might say, well, each of us has his or her own life to lead. If a person wants to end his or her life, why should we butt in?
That was asked. I was on AFSP, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I had the opportunity to go to a national conference, and that was asked of the president of AFSP. What about that question? And he said, we're a suicide prevention group. We cannot endorse any suicide. So that, I think, is an individual decision between a person and their doctor, maybe. But as a suicide prevention group, it would be difficult to support that and to have an opinion on that.
Right. further is that thoughts of actually killing yourself are temporary and cyclical. So if a loved one or a friend or a mental health professional can interrupt that cycle, figure out how that person can just hold on until they make the phone call to the professional, or until they see their professional, or go out and take a walk. If they can do what they need to do, that will be able to help them just for that little bit of time, which can prevent that suicide that time. I'm not talking about tomorrow, but just for now. So it is preventable. As Dick said, there's a certain percentage may not be preventable, but in general, it is preventable just by talking, doing, and caring.
And a guy, Kevin Hines, is one of the few people who survived jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. And we brought him here to the Lehigh Valley jointly with NAMI of the Lehigh Valley and with AFSP, our local chapter. And he said a couple of interesting things in his speech. One was, all I wanted was for somebody to reach out to me and show that they cared. And he gave different examples throughout, leading up to jumping off the bridge, where people ignored him, didn't pay attention to him. Even though he was crying and upset, the bus driver would say, just hurry up, kid, get off the bus. The other interesting thing was when he made the vault, he put his hands like a pommel horse and vaulted over the railing to jump over the bridge. He said as soon as he went over the railing, he realized he had made a big mistake.
Oh, wow. What a story. That answers the question right there, why we should care.
Right.
Well, my guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse have been Richard Orleman and Allison France, both working out of Lehigh County and heavily involved in suicide prevention. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death nationally, and over 1,900 Pennsylvanians died by suicide in 2016. And that's the reason we're approaching this subject tonight on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Stay tuned now for high schoolers who are coming along to tell us about their club at Nazareth Area High School.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
I'm so pleased to have as our guests this evening for the last segment on Lehigh Valley Discourse three folks from Nazareth Area High School. Advisor of the club, Mary Pritchard, who is school psychologist. And we have two students, Sam Burns and Chelsea Hillman. Also, to talk about a certain club called AVIDUM. Let's just spell it right from the beginning. AEVIDUM. And we'll get into how we got in touch with the folks in AVIDUM in just a minute. Let's start off with Chelsea. What year in high school and what are your plans?
I'm a senior this year, and my plans for after high school are to take a gap year to just work and really figure out what I want to do.
Excellent. And Sam?
I'm a senior in high school, and I plan to major in graphic design and minor in entrepreneurship.
And you don't know yet where you want to do that?
Nope,
Somewhere in Pennsylvania.
Some four-year university in Pennsylvania.
Four-year university. And Mary Pritchard is school psychologist. How many years have you been at Nazareth Area High School?
Oh, gosh. I've been at Nazareth since 2002, but I've been in the field since 1983.
Mm-hmm. And you are the advisor of this club called AVIDUM.
Yes.
So tell us, how did that begin?
Well, AVIDUM began in 2004 in Cocalico, PA, at Cocalico High School, which is in Lancaster County. They lost a student to suicide, Phil Carden. And his friends realized that a lot of people didn't want to openly talk about what had happened. And they felt that needed to happen for the youth. And so they started AVIDUM. Fast forward to 2014, and Nazareth lost one of its alumni, Josh Johnson, to suicide. And Josh's parents went looking for a program to bring to the schools and found Avedum. So in spring of 2015, they approached our school district about bringing the Avedum Club to Nazareth. And they hosted the first local consortium in spring of 2015. We took six students. I'll be honest, I had no idea what to expect when we went. This is very unusual. Usually we bring programs in that are kind of adult-driven. And so we went to this program, this talk workshop, and all six students said, we must bring this back to Nazareth.
Wow, what a great story. So tell me a little bit about how the club works. Sam, why is the message of Avedum important?
I think it's really important, especially for high schoolers, to know that someone has their back. That is Avedum's catchphrase, we have your back. For some people, high school is really hard, and Avedum's message is really great for all students, hoping that they'll take it home with them. Some students also don't have someone at home that they can turn to for mental health awareness, so it's great for them to find a friend or someone they don't know to listen to and be supportive.
Dick Orleman earlier in the broadcast said that when I asked the question, when we see a case of suicide, do we automatically think mental illness? And he said 90% of the time, yes. So when you all are thinking about this topic in Avedum, you also are thinking mental illness, correct?
Yeah, typically.
Typically. For Mary Pritchard, how is Avedum different from other suicide prevention initiatives? Now, this is for middle schoolers and high schoolers.
Correct. Although Nazareth is primarily focused on the secondary level, National Avedum is developing some programming for the lower grade levels. On the lower grade levels, it's more presenting information to the students. But on the secondary level, it's really about the conversation peer-to-peer. And that's how this is very different from other suicide prevention initiatives, because we empower our student leaders to have the conversation with their friends, knowing that in any typical school setting, the ratio of school psychologists to students or school counselors to students is very low. I'm one school psychologist covering thousands of students. Typically, there's a handful of counselors in a high school. It's impossible to know what's happening for all students. However, very often a peer will know that something's going on. And so this program empowers them to be supportive, but it's also not a peer counseling program. It's saying, okay, be supportive, but then bring your friend to the appropriate adult who can help them get the help they need.
You said that Avedum began in the southern part of Pennsylvania. Does that mean, and it spread from there to be national?
We are a national organization now. We are still primarily in this area of the country, but our hope is to spread it wide. We have Nazareth in particular, and maybe I'll let Chelsea speak to this, has done a lot of community outreach.
Oh, Chelsea. Yeah.
So we have definitely, since the start of Avedum, gone across the state. We've done many workshops in other parts of the state of Pennsylvania for thousands of students and have trained Avedum leaders from three schools in Western and Northern PA on how to lead the workshops in hopes that they will then take it to other schools near them. We also presented the Avedum model at the International Institute for Restorative Practices World Conference in October, and there were people there from as far away as Australia and the UK, and then as close as Bethlehem, hearing our message of student empowerment.
Wow. And I attended one of these workshops that you all put on at Nazareth Area High School. And Mary, that day, it seems to me there were maybe a half dozen other schools coming in with their students, both middle school and high school levels.
Correct. Since we began our program, every fall we host a multi-district talk workshop and typically have around 200 students from different schools in the area who bring 6 to 10 students to hear the message and then hopefully go back and start the club at their schools.
Oh, what a great idea. Yeah. And let me say that the day that I attended back in the fall, it was like an all-school pep rally. The enthusiasm up there. True? From the students' point of view?
Definitely.
Yeah. It's not what we think of typically as a club at a high school, where you're in a classroom and there might be a dozen or two dozen students who are interested in a certain topic and it's quite calm. And no, you had music going. You had people parading on the stage. It was quite exciting. And then what happens after that general, you had at the beginning a gathering of all the 200 or so students who had come from other places. And then what did you do when you broke into groups?
So it starts with just a general overview of what the AVITA mission and message is, just so the students kind of have a framework. Because very often they come to these, like we came to our first workshop, not really understanding what it's all about. And I think sometimes they're surprised by the level of empowerment, the level of that we hand really the story over to the students. So I'm gonna let Sam talk about what happens, you know, when we, you know, we do the introduction and then we actually break down into small groups and our student leaders actually run those groups without an adult present.
So we'll start with a welcome and music, and the AVITA leaders and members of our school will be standing at the doors when the other schools arrive. We're dancing, we're giving them high fives.
That's fun.
Yeah, we do. And then so when we get into our groups, we'll do icebreakers and just to get to know each other. But then we're able to like focus in and talk about a serious topic, but while ending on a positive note by brainstorming ideas for activities to do at our own schools to spread the message of having each other's
back. Yeah, so learning can be fun. Could be a subtopic or a subtitle for this exercise. Give me an example of an icebreaker when you're with students from other schools. Chelsea?
One that I've used a lot in recent years is, it's a little difficult to explain, but in your small group, one person starts usually the leader of the group. And you say the name of a celebrity. So, for instance, Selena Gomez. The next person would have to say someone's name that starts with G, so the first letter of her last name. And it gets people thinking, and it gets them engaged, and it's just a lot of fun, and everyone has a lot of fun with
it. That's cool. And especially would be interesting when somebody mentions a name of someone you never heard of. Who's that? It could be made up, Chelsea. It could not be a real person, but who cares, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter because it's all about, because understand that we intentionally mix these groups so that students from the same school aren't necessarily with the people they came with, because we find that part of the other main focus of AVITAM is getting people a little out of their comfort zone. So, and being willing to engage with people that maybe they don't know well, people that they haven't met before.
Exactly. They're strange. It's kind of like the first day that you go to high school, and it's very uncomfortable, huh? So, again, we're talking about a club at this particular one is at Nazareth Area High School. It's called AVITAM, A-E-V-I-D-U-M. That comes from Latin, right? And it really means sort of, we've got your back?
Yeah, in a sense.
In a sense, yes, right. We'd have to ask some Latin scholar about that. I'm curious.
It is a made-up word. We will acknowledge that.
Oh, it's a made-up word.
Yes,
all right.
But it has Latin roots. Yeah. Vid.
It looks Latin. Chelsea, how do you keep the conversation flowing when you're in one of these breakout groups at your workshops?
If they are really not willing to talk or not comfortable, you can just ask them about how their day has been or what they plan to do on the weekend. And that really helps people to be comfortable in this new setting. And again, they're most likely with people that they don't know. And it really just gets people talking. And then you can kind of steer the conversation back into suicide prevention and mental illness, but also be talking about some more simple subjects.
And because all the students have participated in the the big gathering at the beginning. They all know that they're there to talk about suicide prevention. But your challenge at the point of the breakout groups is to get them comfortable enough to talk in this group of strangers. Now, some of the students in that breakout group, they would know. They might be the four or five or six from their school, and then combined with some other students that they don't know. Is that the
Correct.
Way it works?
Yes. And really the beginning aspect of the day really sets the stage and gives them permission to talk about the things that maybe, and our experience has been in the program, that many times the students give voice to things that they haven't given voice to before, because we have given them permission to be open and honest in their conversation about it. And Avidem isn't just about suicide prevention, though. That's our primary focus, but then our secondary goal is a school culture initiative. Because based on the research out of the University of Pennsylvania, we have discovered, and this is Avidem National did this research, that when students feel accepted, appreciated, acknowledged, and cared for, they're more likely to be help-seeking and open to the help that they need.
That would be true for adults.
It's true
in their
for
90s
everybody.
Also,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and that's the other interesting thing, and we'll talk about some of the activities we've done at school, that we don't just focus on the students, we focus on the adults in the school as well, and that's everybody. That's teachers, administrators, custodians, cafeteria workers. We do school-wide programs and initiatives that incorporate everyone, because we want everyone to feel accepted, appreciated, acknowledged, and cared for.
That's really great. When I think back to my years in school, there was never anything that included all of the people, the staff, the faculty, the students, and everybody who worked there. This is really neat.
And so, Sam, what were some of the, maybe you could share some of the examples of some school-wide programs that we've done?
Sure. So the reason I got introduced to Avidem as a freshman was because I had been walking in the hallway, and an upperclassman handed me a flower that had an Avidem tag on it, and she just complimented me, and it just made my day. And so I found out about the club that way, and ever since then I've been in it. Some other activities we do are like putting sticky notes on lockers during stressful periods of throughout the year, maybe exam week. We do positive messages on chalk on the sidewalks to outside entrances of our school. Last year, we had yellow hands, where we put every administrator, teacher, cafeteria workers, custodians, and all of the students and teachers' names on these yellow hands, and we put them in the windows of our cafeteria to show that they were accepted and appreciated at our school. So everyone had a good time looking for their name on the windows. We also have a thing every month called Avidem Heroes, where we have club members nominate staff and staff nominate students who exemplify the four pillars of accepting, appreciating, acknowledge, and care for others. We have their pictures hung on our Avidem bulletin board outside the cafeteria then.
Wow, that's a lot of effort to get the word out about Avidem. Mary, if listeners are interested in bringing Avidem to their community, how would they do that? Now, this is strictly through schools, correct?
At this point, yes. Yes. We do community outreach, where we do presentations, but it is a school initiative. So one way would be to go on the Avidem website, clubs@avidem.org.
Clubs at Avidem. And again, that's AEVIDUM. .org.
And there's information on the website regarding how to request information. It also, all of our curricular materials are there. Our mission and message is very clearly outlined on the website. Locally in the Lehigh Valley, an option would be just to reach out to myself directly, M. Pritchard, MPRITCHARD, at NazarethASD.org. And Jim Presto, who brought Avidem to the Lehigh Valley, is very active on the local suicide prevention task force. So Jim, through the task force, could be another resource.
A great resource, yes. I still have not met Jim, but I need to at some point. We're talking about suicide prevention, and in most cases, in fact, we have learned today in 90% of the cases, it has to do with mental illness. And one of the things that we work with mental illness is to get rid of stigma. And you folks are a part of that big effort with Avidem. Mary Pritchard is the school psychologist at Nazareth Area High School, also with middle school?
Correct, yep.
You have a lot on your plate.
It's a large group of students, yes.
And students who are both seniors, right? Sam Burns and Chelsea Hillman have been my guests this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, getting us to better acquainted with this club called Avidem. Let me end our conversation here by saying that I knew nothing about Avidem at all until I went to the main office at Nazareth Area High School, and two of the receptionists, when I said I'm looking for a club or clubs here at the high school that we would like to put on the air at WDIY, in unison, two of them said right away, Avidem. And that was a week before I attended that workshop back in the fall that I was talking about. And so I was so impressed with that, and am truly impressed by the efforts that you all are making. Congratulations. This Avidem can only grow from here. This has been Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thank you so much, listeners, for joining us this evening. Thanks to Neil Heaver for our engineering this evening. And until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.